Larry. Fucking Larry.
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 Larry. Larry, get into bed now.
This is episode 250 of That Larry Show, and I am Larry. And if someone had told me, even as recently as 10 episodes back, that I'd be doing this show in a world on pause, a living dystopia that I had described merely for entertainment purposes in a number of other episodes, I would not have believed it. It's almost as if that stupid, what was it, that mannequin challenge thing has become a government mandate. Don't move. And stay 6 feet apart and wear a mask. Surreal, isn't it? We're now in the third week of isolation here in Los Angeles. I refuse to use the word lockdown. A lot of people seem to like that word. I don't. Those who revel in its use probably have no concept of its origin. They should spend some time in a federal pen, in lockdown, and see how sexy they find that word. It's a stupid, stupid word. But here we are. When I started thinking about this episode, I was going to call it Writing It Out, something like that. Make a thumbnail of myself on a surfboard on a gigantic wave made of those hideous red spiked balls that resemble naval mines that have come to symbolize this scourge. Oh, by the way, did you know the first known use of naval mines was in 14th century China? Fascinating, isn't it? Everything about this situation seems to revert back to China and commies. But then I thought, why just ride it out? We rode out a hell of an earthquake in LA back in 94, and the aftershocks that went on for weeks. We wrote out days of riots that burned the city in 92. People riot out all kinds of shit. Tornadoes, hurricanes, illnesses, recessions, wars, unemployment. And the idea is to just hang on to survive until the storm passes. But this is different. This feels like it will never end. This makes us feel powerless. However, in some corkscrew way, unless we're afflicted with this virus, and thankfully most of us will not be, then this period of isolation could be viewed as a gift of time, a big fat chunk of time. I did another show that could have been a prelude to this one. It was called The Time Bandits. It was episode 14, I think. You can find it at thatlarryshow.com. And it concerned all the people and things that rob our time from us. Things over which we have zero control. Things like traffic and commutes to work. Things like sleep. You gotta have it, but it steals a full third of our lives. Things like worthless years spent in various schools. Things like dead-end jobs we hate. Or even good jobs that we still hate. Days we spend on hold with cell phone companies or credit card outfits or insurance companies or in fucking tax prep or waiting in line at the supermarket or staring at 404s on laptop screens and so on. And if all those time bandits don't steal enough of our lives, we rip ourselves off doing mindless, unproductive shit. What if, at the end of this isolation, we would all be dead? Would we spend these final weeks binge-watching TV, or playing video games, or fighting with assholes on Twitter? When we face our shortcomings, when we rationalize our failures, what's the most common excuse? Well, I didn't have time. And yeah, between making a buck and raising a family, there is not much time to become a best-selling author or a guitar god or world champion of whatever is your dream. But now, here we are. Other than those essential folks who are still commuting to jobs, the rest of us have this vast gift of time. What are we going to do with it? Some remarkable things can be created, or at least set in motion in a very brief period of time. And when this bizarre period ends, and things return to some semblance of normalcy, what will we have to show for it? Nobody talks about it in those terms. They talk about it in terms of killing time, huh? You see all these suggestions from people on social media and officialdom to idiots on the morning shows on how to get through this period of isolation. And mostly, their ideas are to be a slug. That we should bolt our asses to a couch in front of a screen and binge watch this or that. Something like 80% of the coronavirus deaths have been obese people. Betcha most of them were binge watchers. And now the fucking media morons are encouraging more, huh? Get them ready to be victims for the next pandemic. But perhaps there are those among us, binge watchers included, who have an Olympian's BMI and a seven-figure bank account and have achieved everything they ever wanted. So let them binge watch Jimmy Neutron or assemble a half-acre jigsaw puzzle or fuck off in any way they see fit. And when this insanity passes, they can get back to cruising on their yacht or enlarging their car collection or do whatever the hell they want because they are exactly where they want to be in every way, and God bless them. But I don't know anybody like that. When this is over, and it will end, if your intention is to take up exactly where you left off, then binge. Watching anything other than some tutorial won't improve anyone's life one tiny bit. Might distract us from the situation, take our minds off a job loss or dwindling savings, but on balance, all entertainment is a diversion. Nothing is achieved or accomplished. Nothing. Not that there's anything wrong with collapsing in front of a screen with a cold one and a bowl of popcorn and just putting your brain in neutral and zoning out for a couple of hours. But for weeks on end, is that a good idea? When this government-mandated timeout is done, most people who are among those not afflicted with coronavirus, will be fatter, drunker, broker, and no wiser. But some will emerge from these trying times stronger, healthier, richer, and wiser. How will they do that? Even in the worst of times, some guys manage to benefit. And it may not even be a personal or financial benefit. There's a lot of good to be derived from doing good. Maybe braving the lines at the supermarket for some elderly neighbor who truly is housebound. Or retrieving the unread newspapers from their doorstep or just taking in their empty trash cans for them. Each day is a seesaw ride, isn't it? The media heavily slants the news toward doom and gloom because that's what keeps us watching their bullshit. If the CBS or CNN or Twitter or Drudge headline said, "Vaccine discovered, all is well," their views and revenues would plummet faster than the stock market has. A lot of people believe that in Chinese, the words crisis and opportunity are synonyms. Whether that's true or not, within every crisis is opportunity, and that's a stone fact. Fortunes will be made from this pandemic. Teabags, M&Ms, duct tape, crazy glue, radar, zippers, and canned food all came out of wars. Until there's a perfectly safe vaccine, and all 7.8 billion planetary inhabitants have been inoculated, how many of us will feel comfortable in a crowded restaurant, or a movie theater, or a classroom, or an office, or a health club, or gym, or on public transportation, or getting a haircut? How many guys are getting rich at this moment, installing plexiglass barriers at supermarket check stands? How many businesses are going to be redesigned or founded to assuage post-pandemic jitters and enable commerce. What the computer did for business will be nothing, nothing compared to what will come out of this crisis. People have done amazing things in astonishingly brief intervals of time. Jack Kerouac wrote On the Road, a book that had tremendous influence on me and millions of others. He wrote that in a mere 3 weeks. Arthur Conan Doyle introduced Sherlock Holmes to the world with a book written in 3 weeks. Beyoncé wrote Single Ladies in 20 minutes. Greg Allman, the Midnight Rider, in an hour or so. R.E.M., Losing My Religion, 10 minutes. The list goes on. So what if you could turn this global disaster into an opportunity? Every December 31st, billions of us, myself excluded, I hate New Year's, but others whoop it up and make resolutions and claim they're going to make a fresh start, turn over a new leaf. A tiny fraction of them ever do. Most of us just go back to business as usual. But what's fascinating is how we seem to need some line of demarcation, some jumping off point, even if it's as meaningless and arbitrary as a date on a calendar. We need that to take our shots at new beginnings. Well, now we have one, a real one, and how many of us even recognize it? Think of how historians have defined the ages, huh? The Gilded Age, the Jazz Age, World War I, Roaring Twenties, Great Depression, World War II, the post-war era, the Cold War era, the Information Age. Those are all chicken shit. The Corona and post-Corona Age will be the deepest line in the sands of time since B.C. and A.D., which, by the way, have been renamed BCE and CE, the handiwork of anti-Christian douchebags. It will always be BC and AD. So how do you make hay while the world is on pause? And by hay, I mean any endeavor that improves you. Maybe it isn't writing a hit song or a best-selling book or some billion-dollar invention. Maybe it's just getting to some better version of you. Maybe you want to learn the trumpet or build a canoe in your basement or drop 40 pounds and turn your average arms into sleeve-popping guns. How about learning to cook or paint or do magic or juggle or spin plates on a cue stick? This might be a good time to reconnect with an old friend or sibling you quarreled with years ago. Maybe you've drifted away from God or never got acquainted with them to begin with. Maybe your flavor of religion has left a bad taste in your mouth. What an opportunity this is to explore. Easy sucks. It's so easy to sit and eat and drink and watch and be passive. The world has been rocked on its axis. Right now, the rotation has a pronounced wobble. But in a few weeks or months, it will self-correct, as it always does. Then what? Will you be worse off, status quo, or better off? Here's a few suggestions that might help make the most of this extraordinary gift of time. It's easy to go Borneo and let things slide. Wear the same clothes for a week, not shave, be a slob. But doing that is not conducive to productivity. In fact, it fosters lassitude. So, set that alarm every day, same as if you had to commute to work. Shower, shave, dress as always, and use the time you're not on the road to chase that dream, to plot and plan and learn. Hanging around the house, even while working from home, is a recipe for weight gain. Maybe cut your portions from normal. The best weight management tool I've found is oatmeal and grapefruit for breakfast. They really suppress appetite. Since the gym is a no-go, you can ramp up the road work. Those resistance bands, they don't feel exactly like a set of free weights, but they are a terrific substitute. They're cheap, they fit in a drawer. You can use them anywhere. YouTube is crawling with routines for using them. Just because we're forced to live in a takeout world doesn't mean we have to be reduced to a McDonald's lifestyle. When my kids were babies, hitting a really nice restaurant was problematic. So once in a while, we'd try to recreate the four-star dining experience at home. We'd spark some candles, spread the fancy tablecloth, play cuisine-appropriate music, kill the television, the phones, shuck the sweats, put on a clean shirt and slacks, same as if you were headed to that special place where you take her for anniversaries. If we didn't feel like cooking, I'd order takeout from the best restaurant that offered it and, the moment it was home, transfer it out of the foil and styrofoam and onto the good china. Then, pop the wine, and you're on the culinary equivalent of a staycation. It worked pretty good then, and it's still working now. If there are no kids, no problem. If you have them, and they're old enough to act civilized, they will enjoy the restaurant at home experience, guaranteed. If they're too young, feed them first, and have your dinner later in the evening, continental style. The cops in LA say burglaries are down, but domestic calls are way up. No surprise there. In close quarters, day in and out, even the best of friends or lovers are going to piss each other off. That can be managed by carving out alone time every day. Maybe take separate walks, bike rides, car rides, whatever. When you rendezvous later, you can compare notes about all the face-masked weirdos and trash cans overflowing with liquor bottles and dead bodies and other detritus you saw in the street. Shoot pictures and let the kids decide who had the best adventure. When we read about life during tough times, the Great Depression or World War II, there's awful tales of hardship, hunger, and scarcity. But there are also many who managed to find some positives among the negatives, who did squeeze opportunity from the crisis. When this forced quarantine is a distant memory, what will we recall of this time? Imagine if you could sit in an otherwise empty room and see time, our time, this time right now, these very weeks in isolation, encased in packing crates. And the crates would hold exactly the amount of time spent doing one thing or another and be clearly marked with a fat Sharpie. On one side of the floor, boxes might be marked sleeping, drinking, hungover, Netflix, porn, Twitch, Fortnite, blaming, fighting, complaining, worrying. On the other side of the room are boxes labeled learning, achieving, planning, building, improving, fixing, working, creating, helping, encouraging, calming. How would those boxes compare? What would be their proportions? Would they make you proud or fill you with regret? Hey, thanks for hanging with me once again. It's always great to be with you. Sorry I'm a little late with a new bonus episode, my interview with Sean, that's the co-host of the Fame Dick Show, but that will post this week, I promise. You can download it at patreon.com/thatlarryshow. You're going to see a side to Sean you haven't before. He's a fascinating dude. Follow the show on Twitter and Facebook. We have a lot of fun there between episodes. Just plug That Larry Show into the search bar. You'll find us. Write to me anytime at thatlarryshow@gmail.com. And come back this weekend for a very special Easter episode of Sinner's Sunday. This might be the most important Easter of our lifetimes. I look forward to seeing you all at that creaky old chapel in the mountains. We'll have cold beer, hot barbecue, and each other. My friends, wherever you are around the world, try not to get caught up in the panic. Not only will your serenity and courage counteract the anxiety, it will enable you to extract the opportunity from this mess and emerge stronger from it. Be well and take no shit.